as a Christian, when I think about what's so wrong about all of this, the image I have is just that this is exactly upside down. Everything that Jesus taught was that the people in power should use their power to help the people who have the least power, the people who are the weakest, the most vulnerable, the hungry, the prisoner. And everything about what's going on right now and how Trump is exploiting Christianity and exploiting religion and trying to win Christians over to vote for him because of it, is he saying, hey, I have power and I'm going to use it to help you keep your power. And that's exactly opposite of Christian teaching, what Jesus taught. And it's exactly why this whole thing is so upside down. I'm Shaprila Maglio, and I live in Washington, D.C. I'm an attorney. I'm a political and legal consultant. I'm a Christian, and I'm an advisory member of the Not Our Faith group.
Not Our Faith is a political action committee with a mission: erode President Trump's most loyal religious constituency, white Christians, specifically evangelicals and Catholics. It's one of many political organizations with a focus on faith and values, and they're gearing up to get out the vote and shape the decision of voters in the final days of the 2020 presidential elections. Welcome to Inspired, a production of Interfaith Voices. I'm Umbreen Khan. This week, in the final days of the 2020 campaign, we're taking a closer look at the battle for the faith and values voter and the numbers. We begin with Shaprila Maglio. In 2016, she worked as an advocate for a nonpartisan association of Christian organizations. That meant, despite personal feelings about then-candidate Trump, she had to remain silent. This year is different.
I feel it's my obligation to speak out. Freed from the kind of constraints of working for a nonpartisan nonprofit organization. And I think it's because there has never been a more egregious time to speak out and say no. Being a Christian does not mean you vote only one way. There is not only one way to be, quote, pro-life. And there is just a crucial imperative for the culture and to combat the toxicity and the exploitative nature of the culture that Donald Trump has sought to foment and to grow and to pit us against one another as Americans.
For more than a decade, LaMaglia worked as an advocate on behalf of Christian colleges and universities. Exploitation is a word she uses often when it comes to describing the political environment in Washington, one she got to see close up.
I've been on Capitol Hill and I've asked Republican lawmakers to support things that Christian organizations need, and they don't want to do it. There's a political calculation that because they actually, some of them want the problems to remain so that they can gin their voters up about them. This is not a profound thing to say on the one hand, but on the other hand, when as a Christian person raised in a state very far away from here who had no idea about the inner workings of Washington, D.C., and I was raised to believe that there are these moral Christian ways that you vote, and then you get here and you see the exploitative nature of how people are trying to use faith and exploit it for particular political outcomes and political gains. It is something that I feel compelled to speak out against, as do those who are part of this effort. For me, working here in Washington, D.C. over the last decade in these exact issues, you can't unsee it. So there is a big culture of exploiting religious voters in this city. And for those of us who have seen it, we can't stay silent.
LaMaglia was referring to the PAC's advisory council. Now, in communications with the PAC, the organization noted that their funds and donors are separate from religious entities and the Democratic Party. Their primary outreach is advertising on broadcast and digital media, short ads, and each has a clear audience, like this one.
As Catholics, we understand that no matter who's president, our faith is going to lead us to disagree with them on certain issues. Past presidents have treated us with respect, but this guy is something else. Donald Trump and the people around him have insulted our bishops, even the Holy Father.
Disgraceful. The Pope needs to seek Donald Trump's forgiveness.
Maybe that's why a majority of Catholics are voting against him this election.
The political advisors involved in the PAC are savvy. Many once held senior leadership positions in organizations that work at the intersection of religion and politics in Washington, D.C. Groups that range from the National Association of Evangelicals, Catholic Relief Services, to influential seminary leaders from institutions like Fuller Theological. One of the lead organizers is Michael Ware. He is no stranger to campaigns. He ran religious outreach for President Barack Obama's re-election campaign. The first ad sought to remind voters about immigration, and that's an issue that Limoglio insists resonates across the various streams of Christianity.
It's just so deeply core to the message of Christianity. Jesus was a refugee. I mean, the Bible is just filled with scriptures about welcoming the stranger, about protecting the person among you who isn't the citizen, who's the alien among you. And this administration has lowered the number of refugees to the lowest since 1980. They're no longer allowing people coming up to the southern border to claim asylum and cross into the border consistent with our laws, which means that the largest refugee camp, there's been reporting on this in the last few days, that we've ever had at our borders has sprung up. And it is just the conditions there are deeply devastating. The images of that father and his daughter drowning in the Rio Grande River are seared into the minds of some of us for the rest of our lives, because they were turned back. The 545 children whose parents cannot be found, who have effectively been kidnapped by our government. The Bible says, suffer the little children to come unto me, not make the children suffer. And it is one of the ways in which the Trump administration has been the most cruel and the most deeply antithetical to the Christian faith.
One thing that becomes clear in the Not Our Faith ad campaign is the echoing of Biden campaign messaging, that he will restore a hopeful vision, one where civility, decency, and respect for all is elevated. Those were also themes that effectively helped President Obama win white voters. Lapaglio's group is not the only initiative seeking to reach Catholics. Catholic Vote, an organization that seeks to support the election of President Trump, are also rallying their base and using videos with a different message.
Joe Biden would force American Catholics to pay for abortions, sacrificing his Catholic values to kneel before the leftist mob.
Biden-Harris, the most anti-life presidential ticket ever.
Conservative Christians are also rallying their base in other ways, turning to many in-person events, including celebrations. For religion reporters covering faith and politics, this election season has been intense. Jack Jenkins is a national reporter for the Religion News Service. We found a break in his very busy schedule to hop on Zoom. Welcome back to Inspired. Last time we talked, you wrote a book about the progressive faith movement engaging in politics, not to count them out.
It's been a busy season. My book was about the religious left, and it's certainly true that throughout this campaign season, and I think one of the more interesting stories is how often and how frequent progressive and liberal faith leaders have played a role, both over the course of this campaign, whether that's showing up and speaking at the Democratic National Convention or, you know, endorsing Joe Biden, which several hundred have over the last few weeks, including progressive faith leaders whose support for Biden is not necessarily that atypical or that unsurprising, but for whom a public endorsement is. It has also been interesting to watch these more conservative faith leaders and these more conservative faith communities also be mobilized and energized ahead of this election, and kind of which coalition Trump seems to try to be cobbling together for Election Day. And what I think has been a really interesting question is that there are signs that, at least in our reporting, where we see the kind of slippage at the edges of Trump's coalition from 2016, at least in polling.
Did you see any particular coalescing around issues?
I think activist elements of the religious left, however defined, are galvanized by opposition to Trump's travel ban, as well as his treatment of religious minorities, which they see as, you know, inherently discriminatory. You know, you definitely see particularly support for immigrants and refugees still as a driving force within those kind of more activist-centered religious communities. But one thing I think that has been really interesting over the course of the last few months is that the biggest issue is the pandemic. And that still seems to be the case among religious communities as well. We've seen polling recently that shows that for most faith communities, with the exception of white evangelical Protestants, you know, the pandemic and concerns about the pandemic are like one of their number one issues and concerns heading into Election Day. And what's interesting is that what is often connected to that, pretty obviously, is concerns about healthcare. So you have seen this sort of, you know, one, frustration with how the president has handled the pandemic, and then connecting to that, concerns about healthcare and access to healthcare. I think one of the more telling statistics that I've seen over the last few months is one that was pulled out by an analyst named Ryan Burge, who was looking at, I believe, data from Data for Progress, where he noted that support among white evangelicals for Trump still remained very high and very significant. And it's almost certain they will continue to support him in massive numbers come Election Day. But when you ask that same group if they, either they had contracted COVID-19 or someone they know had contracted COVID-19, support for Trump dropped roughly 9 points. And I think that, to me, says a lot about what Trump is up against, including among religious elements of his base, where despite appealing to this sort of, you know, marriage of the American flag and the Bible in the past as a way to really galvanize that religious group, it really does seem that the pandemic itself can even chip away at that community. So I've seen both the activist religious left and, you know, the more moderate elements of that community really latch on to healthcare as a major concern going into November.
I thought where you were going was around the closures of churches and faith-based entities.
Now, and that's a good point, which is, you know, as you know, there has certainly been some debate and some energy around the topic of whether or not houses of worship should gather in person to hold worship services. This has been a topic that's debated at the, you know, city and county and state level across the country. The White House has clearly projected this idea that they wanted to celebrate the idea of opening churches. The president himself told Religion News Service recently that he was very excited to hear that faith communities were reopening. And, you know, I was just over the weekend at this event on the National Mall run by Sean Foyt.
I have to pause there and tell you, I don't know who that is. Who is Sean Foyt? For those of us who don't know.
So he's a Christian recording artist and a Christian musician whose, you know, main medium is what's often called praise and worship music. And Sean Foyt is a prominent praise and worship music leader. Mm. He's also a failed congressional candidate. He ran for Congress in California this year and didn't garner more than 14% of the vote in the open primary. And after that, he has since launched this tour called the Let Us Worship Tour, which was framed as an opposition to the state and local regulations against faith communities being allowed to worship in person. Mm. And so he's toured around the country hosting events, sometimes without a permit and in direct defiance of local authorities who'd ask him not to, for fear of, you know, because so many people show up to these events without wearing masks in close proximity, shouting and singing very loudly. Even though it's outside, it's still a lot of people packed together and often not wearing masks as a part of these sorts of concerts. At these events, you have seen repeatedly faith advisors to Donald Trump delivering short sermons during the performances. That has been a part of that as well. And then just this past weekend, when he kind of had the last major event of this tour, you know, he wanted 15,000. He got fewer than that. It was a rainy day in D.C., but he did have a crowd out there, you know, worshiping. And you had Jenison Franklin, a pastor who is also a faith advisor to Trump, as well as Missouri Senator Josh Hawley, also spoke and prayed for the group. He is a Republican senator who's been very supportive of putting Amy Coney Barrett on the Supreme Court. And I bring all that to say that issue of whether or not churches should worship has become this politicized issue. The question that lingers behind it, while it is certainly a point of debate, is whether or not it has moved many voters. And that's something that I haven't seen firm data indicating one way or another, if the Trump campaign has effectively been able to cast Democrats as anti-religious for not lifting these restrictions on houses of worship, or if that has just been the debate itself is too atomized to really make into a political narrative. I don't have a clear answer to that, although it is obvious and very true that white evangelical Protestants in particular seem to care about that issue significantly more than you would have in other faith groups. I will note that same Public Religion Research Institute poll indicated how all these different faith groups were very concerned about the pandemic. Mm-hmm. Every single faith group polled, all of them, listed concern for the pandemic in one of their top three concerns, except for white evangelical Protestants. Mm-hmm. They are the only religious group that did not list it as a primary or the top three concerns moving into Election Day, which shows you just how different of a worldview, even just a different encounter and understanding of the pandemic in that community versus literally every major faith group in the United States. And I think it's also seen as a theological statement sometimes, including the people I was speaking to at this concert over the weekend. I mean, some people really kind of see this, you know, wearing masks and engaging in social distancing as an act of protecting somebody else. They see it as this sort of religious call to try to protect and try to, you know, do the right responsible thing for your neighbor, as it were. Whereas among some white evangelical Protestants and some of their allies that I've seen in some of these spaces, they make a different argument, which is that God will protect your health, or that you should, you know, trust in God in that capacity. I have heard and seen people say they think of it differently, that their faith will be able to protect them, or if it won't, then that's just like part of the bravery that they should try to model anyway, that nothing should keep you from worshiping, even if it puts you or others at risk.
The theological kind of explanation that you're offering, or that rather you're hearing about the way people react to masks, reminds me that there is a tremendous amount of diversity among faith communities, including the Catholic community. And boy, is there a battle for the Catholic vote. Can you give us your perspective? What are you seeing? What is different this year?
American Catholics are pretty much a bellwether constituency, but there are so many of them that it's very important to pull over the persuadable portions of that electorate that we've seen one of the fiercest media fights I've ever seen over this constituency this year compared to previous years. It helps Biden that there has been, you know, Pope Francis, who is perceived to be more liberal leaning in his views. And so he can kind of invoke Pope Francis from the stump quite often. But it also helps Trump that there has been some conservative backlash to Pope Francis here in the United States, and that conservative Catholics have been really galvanized by their frustration, both with him and some others in their church hierarchy. So it's a really interesting debate this year.
In my experience covering elections and having worked on campaigns, one of the biggest days, one of the biggest roles that faith communities can play is on the day of voting. I remember initiatives called Souls to the Polls, and I'm wondering, are we likely to see that happen, especially right now in the midst of a pandemic?
Don't be surprised if on Election Day you see groups of people who are hailing from one faith community or another, you know, being organized to vote, probably socially distanced in like, you know, a caravan of individual vehicles. And that has always been true on Election Day. I just really get some signals so far that if in certain states that a lot of faith communities are really stepping up to try to get their communities to make sure that their voice is heard with an energy and with an intensity I have never seen before. Maybe that's because, you know, everything is happening online now and that's why we can see it. But I have a hunch turnout's going to be really high, and I think faith communities are going to be a big reason for why that is.
That was Jack Jenkins, national reporter for the Religion News Service, and Shapri Limaglia, a member of the advisory council of the Not Our Faith campaign. Polls are informing not only strategy, but a deeper understanding of the issues that are motivating voters. Coming up, my conversation with Ryan Berg. We talk about data, polling, and his predictions for Election Day. This is Inspired, a production of Interfaith Voices. Stay with us. I hope you're enjoying this week's show. I wanted to take a short break to tell you a few things about Inspired that you may not know. Our show was founded by a nun named Maureen Fiedler, who in the days after 9/11 saw a need for a national broadcast that would explore the rich diversity of beliefs among Americans. Since then, our commitment to creating and producing compelling radio has never wavered. Nor has our commitment to making it available to everyone for free. No paywalls ever. But it's not free to produce this show, and we don't receive any funds from National Public Radio or the local stations that carry us. So I need to ask you for your support. If you enjoy Inspired, if you value it and count on it, please consider donating today. You can do that on our website at interfaithradio.networkforgood.com. interfaithradio.networkforgood.com. And thank you for your support. Now, back to the show.